we move forward out of Wounded Knee. Wounded Knee came to a standstill. The leaders were originally, everybody was charged with something and taken into custody. Is that what took place? And then they backed back out of that and they were not charged?
I think
charged?
They came to an agreement. Yeah. And these gentlemen can. I think the agreement was, let's stand down, and you know what? We're going to hear your grievances. So the AIM people said, well, okay, that's really what we wanted. We wanted you to hear our grievances. We want to talk about treaty rights. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe after the, I don't know if it's appropriate to call it a surrender, but after the stand down, they found that they were charged. Is that your memory?
They were charged, but I think when they went to court, most of the cases were thrown out of court.
I think so.
Yeah, it was never really.
I'm not sure.
You know, they called that an occupation. You know, half those people that were there were Oglala. They were from Wounded Knee. How do you occupy something that's yours? If you, you know, stand in your backyard with a sign, are you occupying your backyard? Should we call the feds on you?
I actually never thought of it in those terms.
So AIM became entangled at that point. Mm-hmm. There's some other incidents, but after that point, leadership, people became legally entangled in the courts. AIM had a name for itself on a national level. What happens at the Jumping Bull Complex? We move forward a couple years.
That was anybody on the AIM side thing, this is all just a big setup. They needed to arrest people. They needed to shut down the AIM movement. And so,
what was at the Jumping Bulls?
It was just a camp.
Home.
It was an AIM camp, but they were there.
They were dirt poor traditionalists. They were there learning to sweat. They were there learning to pray. Pretty much, they were there preparing, getting ready for Sundance.
And two federal agents appeared on the scene. And what were they? Why were they there? Why would these two federal agents come to the Jumping Bull home?
The premise is somebody stole a pair of boots, and they chased the kid down onto the compound to get him. But they came flying in an unmarked car. These two guys, you know, and you know, in the 70s on a reservation, in 2006 on a reservation, you don't come flying into anybody's yard with guns. Because it sets everybody off. Man, so they came flying in after these guys and hopped out of the car with guns. And the keg went off.
Conflict.
Yeah, conflict followed.
Yeah, I mean, what you got to remember is after Wounded Knee, you know, the goons ran wild on Wounded Knee, Pine Ridge, you know, over in Oglala. You know, they were running around. They were target practicing with people.
A lot of people were killed. There were many deaths.
What is it, 500 some murders that were never investigated off there?
It's a lot. I don't know that many, the exact number, but it's astonishingly high.
And, I mean, you know, like Chris said, you know, these guys come cruising in, well, in guns.
And what happened?
A shootout followed.
Between the federal agents
and
the native people living at the compound, the traditional.
Ostensibly over boots?
Yeah, that's what the official story was. It was thereafter a kid that stole some boots. Yeah. So in the process of the shootout, the two feds got killed. And then everybody else escaped. You snuck out the back or wherever you sneak out through.
But that wasn't the end of the story.
No.
Yeah. Well, there was a couple guys arrested over a period of time. Of course, everybody has heard of Leonard Peltier. You know, Leonard Peltier was they made it to Canada, and he was extradited out of Canada into the United States.
It's a huge manhunt for him.
Huge.
Yeah, but the there was a trial that convicted Leonard of killing these two FBI agents, which they'd never really had any hard evidence to connect Leonard to the firearm that killed the two FBI agents.
As far as we can tell from all the interviews and such, the one person that they know didn't kill the agents was Leonard. Like, from all the evidence, you know, they had a bunch of gray areas of here, and it could have been, could have not have been. But from all evidence they have, he's the one person that they know didn't kill him.
So Leonard Peltier was convicted of, out of all of the people at this camp.
Yeah. Well, they had four people that they originally started to try. First, tried the first two, and they got acquitted. So they dropped the third one and went just after Leonard. And they moved the trials and everything like that to a less Indian sympathetic neighborhood.
And Leonard is in jail at this time.
Yeah, and he's still in jail.
Life sentence. Yeah.
Somebody had to answer.
Right. Well, that's what the prosecutor said in one of the. I think. I think Redford's piece on it. Redford did a little documentary on it, and he interviewed the prosecutor, and the prosecutor said that. They're pretty sure that. He was back and forth with the evidence, and they said, well, Leonard couldn't have done it, and he said, well, he was with them. He's in jail because one of them did it. So they're just going to let Leonard rot because they don't know who did it.
I think there have been a number of appeals on his part, at least to retry, ask for a retrial, as that's my understanding, and those have been turned down as well as a movement for a pardon. By the Clinton, there was some.
It was very close too.
Everybody
involved with it thought Clinton was going to pardon him on the way out.
And then the FBI really moved against that, and I was aware of that through the New York Times. The FBI took out an entire page ad with their side of the story, which put out at least a more complete version from their perspective, but. After that point, what happens to AIM after the imprisonment of Leonard Peltier? What happens to the organization?
Well, half of what you call AIM security from the 70s and leaders were tied back up in court again. You had the Bureau of Indian Affairs take over, BIA take over. You had I don't know if a lot of people even know this, but they had Camp Raymond Yellow Thunder in Black Hills, South Dakota. And it was named after Raymond Yellow Thunder that was killed in Gordon, Nebraska. I think they camped there for, 5 years, 6 years? I'm not sure.
It was a long time.
No, I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, that was just closed up. That stayed the name. It was just AIM people there. And basically what it was a chance for people and the inner-city Indians to go and learn about their treaty rights, learn about their spirituality, to re-educate them on who they were. That's what Yellow Thunder was. Grandpa Fullsgrove, Frank Fullsgrove, went there a lot. Did a lot of teaching on Sundance, ceremony, sweat, pipe. Told why we had that pipe, where it came from. A lot of people forgot. Leonard Crow Dog. A lot of people rode through that camp and stopped in. There's a lot of good stories that came from that camp. Yeah.
But as an organization, AIM's leaders are tangled up in the courts, tangled up in other places where they aren't as being as effective as leadership in Indian country, or at least with this organization. AIM goes underground to a degree. Some into these traditional camps start focusing maybe less on national topics or more on regional topics.
I think basically what AIM was looking at that time was the fact of, okay, after Wounded Knee, you got, hundreds of deaths on the Pine Ridge Reservation and around the community. You got Indians that are starting to hate the movement because of this. People's houses got burned down. People's kids got killed. John Tadell, look what happened to his family, They hold a press, protest in Washington, D.C., American flags burnt. Days later, his whole family gets burned up in his house. He lost his whole family. John Tadell was one of the biggest leaders in AIM. And so then you're looking at all these things that happened, And it needed to be a time. It needed to be a break. Ames started looking and saying, okay, you know, we go in with guns. It don't matter how many guns we go in with for, they got more. Okay, if we go do this, then, you know, they knock on our door and they burn, you know, they take our family members. So it was hitting a point. Y'all Thunder was a regrouping. It was saying, okay, guys, let's see what we can do spiritually. You know, everyone knows you can't fight the government with, you know, you can't fight them with guns. You can't throw grenades. They go throw 10 more back, you know. You got to fight them with the pen. They start learning, you know, people like Russell Means and, you know, Bob Robidoux, Glenn Morse, Ward Churchill. You know, these guys started saying, you know, hey, you know, y'all need to stop throwing sticks and start writing on paper. You need to go back and study these treaties. See what the Treaty of 1868 says. See what all these treaties that your ancestors, your grandpas and grandmas signed. And see, look at these treaties and go and fight them that way. Don't be, you know, stop fighting with the, you know, guns. We got to fight them a different way because, I don't know if you know, the Indian population is not really big out there. We can't, you know, stand to lose a whole bunch of us. So that was the mentality then. Let's regroup. You know, one of the big ways that a government, you know, destroys a nation is they go in and they take away something important, food, water. With Indian people, it was their language. It was their way of life. And then it was their food. And they go, and that's what they were trying to reestablish. Like here, you know, we can use the East Coast for a prime example. You look at the East Coast, most tribes on the East Coast can't speak their language. They have no idea what their traditions are. It's lost over 400 years, 500 years gone. They were defeated. Okay? When you start giving that way of life back, you start giving the water back, you start giving the food back, the food, you know, feeding them, then they start to grow spiritually. They become Indian again. They have a belief. They understand that this is the way my grandpa's prayed. And now I'm praying the same way. It makes them think they're someone, that they're special. And now that I'm special, let's go fight these guys. But in a different way. That's what Yellow Thunder was. That's what was going on in Yellow Thunder. That was a rebuilding.